I'm sure you would have heard about the book called The Gulag Archipelago. It's considered one of the most important books of the 20th century, written by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He was a Nobel Prize winning author. And the book is sort of autobiographical about the years he spent in Soviet concentration camps. And it kind of gives you such a deep philosophical and political insight of the Soviet Russia. But more than that, it's a human story. And that's why I think it's a powerful, powerful book. The copies which are published after 2018, they also contain a foreword by Dr. Jordan Peterson. And if you follow him, you would have known that he kind of always talks about this book in his lectures and speeches. And in fact, the current Russian regime, including Putin, they've also appreciated this book. Although when the book was going to be published, or when it was first published, it was banned in Russia because it talks about its dark past. Nevertheless, it has got what it deserved, the kind of acclaim, the kind of praises. And I think you should give this book a try. What I'm going to do in this podcast is I'm going to read the first few passages from the book to give you some idea about the style of writing. It's a translation, of course. The original work was written in Russian, but you'll get the sense of it, the feel of it. So let's start. Chapter 1, Arrest. How do people get to this clandestine archipelago? Hour by hour, planes fly there, ships steer their course there, and trains thunder off to it. But all with nary a mark on them to tell of their destination. And at ticket windows or at travel bureaus for Soviet or foreign tourists, the employees would be astounded if you were to ask for a ticket to go there. They know nothing, and they have never heard of the archipelago as a whole or of any of its innumerable islands. Those who go to the archipelago to administer get there via the training schools of the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Those who go there to be guards are conscripted via the military conscription centers. And those who, like you and me, dear reader, go there to die, must get there solely and compulsorily via arrest. Arrest. Need it be said that it is a breaking point in your life, a bolt of lightning which has scored a direct hit on you, that it is an unassimilable spiritual earthquake not every person can cope with, as a result of which people often slip into insanity. The universe has as many different centers as there are living beings in it. Each of us is a center of the universe, and that universe is shattered when they hiss at you, "You are under arrest." If you are arrested, can anything else remain unshattered by this cataclysm? But the darkened mind is incapable of embracing these displacements in our universe. And both the most sophisticated and the veriest simpleton among us, drawing on all life's experience, can gasp out only, "Me, what for?" And this is a question which, though repeated millions and millions of times before, has yet to receive an answer. Arrest is an instantaneous shattering thrust expulsion somersault from one state into another. We have been happily born, or perhaps have happily dragged our weary way down the long and crooked streets of our lives, past all kinds of walls and fences made of rotting wood, rammed earth, brick, concrete, iron railings. We have never given a thought to what lies behind them. We have never tried to penetrate them with our vision or our understanding. But there is where the Gulag country begins, right next to us, 2 yards away from us. In addition, we have failed to notice an enormous number of closely fitted, well-disguised doors and gates in these fences. All those gates were prepared for us, every last one. And all of a sudden, the fateful gate swings quickly open and 4 white male hands, unaccustomed to physical labor but nonetheless strong and tenacious, grab us by the leg, arm, collar, cap, ear and drag us in like a sack. And the gate behind us, the gate to our past life, is slammed shut once and for all. That's all there is to it. You are arrested. And you'll find nothing better to respond with than a lamb-like bleat. Me? What for? That's what arrest is. It's a blinding flash and a blow which shifts the present instantly into the past and the impossible into omnipotent actuality. That's all. And neither for the first hour nor for the first day will you be able to grasp anything else. Except that in your desperation, the fake circus moon will blink at you. It's a mistake. They'll set things right. And everything which is by now comprised in the traditional, even literary, image of an arrest will pile up and take shape, not in your own disordered memory, but in what your family and your neighbors in your apartment remember. The sharp nighttime ring or the rude knock at the door. The insolent entrance of the unwiped jackboots of the unsleeping state security operatives. The frightened and cowed civilians witness at their backs. And what function does this civilian witness serve? The victim does not even dare think about it, and the operatives don't remember. But that's what the regulations call for. And so he has to sit there all night long and sign in the morning. For the witnesses, jerked from his bed, it is torture too. To go out at night after night to help arrest his own neighbors and acquaintances. The traditional image of arrest is also trembling hands packing for the victim. A change of underwear, a piece of soap, something to eat, and no one knows what is needed, what is permitted, what clothes are best to wear. And the security agents keep interrupting and hurrying you. You don't need anything. They'll feed you there. It's warm there. It's all lies. They keep hurrying you to frighten you. The traditional image of arrest is also what happens afterward when the poor victim has been taken away. It is an alien, brutal, and crushing force totally dominating the apartment for hours on end, a breaking, ripping, open, pulling from the walls, emptying things from wardrobes and desks onto the floor, shaking, dumping out, and ripping apart, piling up mountains of litter on the floor and the crunch of things being trampled beneath jackboots. And nothing is sacred in search. During the arrest of the locomotive engineer Inoshin, a tiny coffin stood in his room containing the body of his newly dead child. The jurists dumped the child's body out of the coffin and searched it. They shake sick people out of their sick beds and they unwind bandages to search beneath them. For those left behind after the arrest, there is the long tail end of a wrecked and devastated life, and the attempts to go and deliver food parcels. But But from all the windows, the answer comes in barking voices. Nobody here by that name. Never heard of him. Yes, and in the worst days in Leningrad, it took 5 days of standing in crowded lines just to get to that window. And it may be only after half a year or a year that the arrested person responds at all. Or else the answer is tossed out, deprived of the right to correspond. And that means, once and for all, no right to correspondence. And that almost for certain means has been shot. That's how we picture arrest to ourselves. The kind of night arrest described is, in fact, a favorite because it has important advantages. Everyone living in the apartment is thrown into a state of terror by the first knock at the door. The arrested person is torn from the warmth of his bed. He's in a daze, half asleep, helpless, and his judgment is befogged. In a night arrest, the state security men have a superiority in numbers. There are many of them armed against one person who hasn't even finished buttoning his trousers. During the arrest and search, it is highly improbable that a crowd of potential supporters will gather at the entrance. The unhurried, step-by-step visits, first to one apartment, then to another, tomorrow to a third and a fourth, provide an opportunity for the security operations personnel to be deployed with the maximum efficiency and to imprison many more citizens of a given town than the police force itself numbers. In addition, there's an advantage to night arrests in that neither the people in neighboring apartment houses nor those on the city streets can see how many have been taken away. Arrests which frighten the closest neighbors are no event at all to those farther away. It's as if they had not taken place. Along that same asphalt ribbon on which the black marias scurry at night, a tribe of youngsters strides by day with banners, flowers, and gay, untroubled songs. But those who take, whose work consists solely of arrests, for whom the horror is boringly repetitive, have a much broader understanding of how arrests operate. They operate according to a large body of theory, and innocence must not lead one to ignore this. The science of arrest is an important segment of the course on general penology and has been propped up with a substantial body of social theory. Arrests are classified according to various criteria: nighttime and daytime, at home, at work, during a journey, first-time arrests and repeats, individual and group arrests. Arrests are distinguished by the degree of surprise required, the amount of resistance expected. Arrests are also differentiated by the thoroughness of the required search, by instructions either to make out or not to make out an inventory of confiscated property or seal a room or apartment, to arrest the wife after the husband and send the children to an orphanage, or to send the rest of the family into exile, or to send the old folks to a labor camp too. No. Arrests vary widely in form. In 1926, Erma Mendel, a Hungarian, obtained through the Comintern 2 front row tickets to the Bolshoi Theater. Interrogator Klegel was courting her at the time and she invited him to go with her. They sat through the show very affectionately, and when it was over, he took her straight to the Lubyanka. And if on a flowering June day in 1927 on Kuznetsky Most, the plump-cheeked, red-headed beauty Anna Skripnikova, who had just bought some navy blue material for a dress, climbed into a handsome cab with a young man about town, you can be sure it wasn't a lover's tryst at all, as the cabman understood very well and showed by his frown. It was an arrest. In just a moment, they would turn on the Lubyanka and enter the black maw of the gates. No, one certainly cannot say that daylight arrest, arrest during a journey, or arrest in the middle of a crowd has ever been neglected in our country. However, it has always been clean-cut, and most surprising of all, the victims, in cooperation with the security men, have conducted themselves in the noblest conceivable manner, so as to spare the living from witnessing the death of the condemned. Not everyone can be arrested at home with a preliminary knock at the door, and not everyone can be arrested at work either. If the person to be arrested is vicious, then it's better to seize him outside his ordinary milieu, away from his family and colleagues, from those who share his views, from any hiding places. It is essential that he have no chance to destroy, hide, or pass on anything to anyone. VIPs in the military or the party were sometimes first given new assignments, ensconced in a private railway car, and then arrested en route. Some obscure, ordinary mortal, scared to death by epidemic arrests all around him and already depressed for a week by sinister glances from his chief, is suddenly summoned to the local party committee, where he is beamingly presented with a vacation ticket to Sochi Sanatorium. The rabbit is overwhelmed and immediately concludes that his fears were groundless. After expressing his gratitude, he hurries home, triumphant, to pack his suitcase. It is only 2 hours till train time, and he scolds his wife for being too slow. He arrives at the station with time to spare, and there in the waiting room or at the bar, he is hailed by an extraordinarily pleasant young man. "Don't you remember me?" "Pyotr Ivanich?" Pyotr Ivanich has difficulty remembering. "Well, not exactly, you see, although..." The young man, however, is overflowing with friendly concern. "Come now, how can that be? I'll have to remind you." And he bows respectfully to Pyotr Ivanich's wife. "You must forgive us, I'll keep him only 1 minute." The wife accedes, and trustingly, the husband lets himself be led away by the arm forever or for 10 years. The station is thronged and no one notices anything. Oh, you citizens who love to travel, do not forget that in every station there are a GPU branch and several prison cells. This importunity of her alleged acquaintances is so abrupt that only a person who has not had the wolfish preparation of camp life is likely to pull back from it. Do not suppose, for example, that if you are an employee of the American embassy by the name of Alexander Dolgan, you cannot be arrested in broad daylight on Gorky Street, right by the Central Telegraph Office. Your unfamiliar friend dashes through the press of the crowd and opens his plundering arms to embrace you. "Sasha!" he simply shouts at you with no effort to inconspicuous. "Hey pal, long time no see. Come on over, let's get out of the way." At that moment, a Pobeda sedan draws to the curb. And several days later, TASS will issue an angry statement to all the papers alleging that informed circles of the Soviet government have no information on the disappearance of Alexander Dolgan. But what's so unusual about that? Our boys have carried out such arrests in Brussels, which was where Zora Bledno was seized, and not just in Moscow. One has to give the organs their due. In an age when public speeches, the plays in our theatres, and women's in fashions all seem to have come off assembly lines, arrests can be of the most varied kind. They take you aside in a factory corridor after you have had your pass checked and you are arrested. They take you from a military hospital with a temperature of 102, as they did with Hans Bernstein. And the doctor will not raise a peep about your arrest. Just let him try. They'll take you right off the operating table, as they took N.M. Vorobyev. A school inspector in 1936 in the middle of an operation for stomach ulcer and drag you off to a cell as they did him, half alive and all bloody. In the gastronome, the fancy food store, you are invited to the special order department and arrested there. You are arrested by a religious pilgrim whom you have put up for the night for the sake of Christ. You are arrested by a meter man who has come to read your electric meter. You are arrested by a bicyclist who has run into you on the street, by a railway conductor, a taxi driver, savings bank teller, a manager of a movie theater. Any one of them can arrest you. And you notice the concealed maroon colored identification card only when it is too late.